Final case of the day, U.S. versus Graham, 04-1335. Mr. Crook.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
My client, Lee Graham, was charged with two counts of assaulting federal officers. He was found not guilty of assaulting Agent O'Malley, and he was found guilty of assaulting Agent Ambrose. The evidence was very close in this case, and when I say that, I mean this, because it's an odd thing to say. It was a five-minute or less occurrence. There were four deputy marshals there, and yet it took a jury 2 days to come to a decision. Each of these deputy marshals was substantially impeached. They contradicted their reports. They contradicted each other. In one case, Agent O'Malley contradicted his own sworn affidavit. And these were not on small things. They were on key things. And I'm going to touch on two very quickly. Before the events which led to the allegation of assault, my client, who had four deputy marshals in his apartment, picked up a telephone and called the Skokie Police Department. He made a 911 call seeking protection from the deputy marshals. The agents, realizing that it's a little awkward to claim that this gentleman was intending to assault them, would, just before the assault, try to get police into his apartment, all wrote reports stating that his wife made the call. Now, at trial, they had to acknowledge, when the recording was played for them, that it was, in fact, Mr. Graham that made the call. Why did they try to put this call on Shanella Graham, his wife? Another key contradiction was, after my client has been rushed by the marshals, after there's been a physical altercation and he's been pepper sprayed, he retreats to a bedroom. He then emerges from the bedroom, and one of the agents testifies that he came out screaming, "I'm going to kill you." One of the four deputy marshals has that in his report and testifies to it at trial. Two of them say they never heard it. It's not in their report. But it was Agent O'Malley, actually, that is the linchpin on this. It's not in his report, but he says at trial he heard it. Yet an affidavit that he prepared said that after the incident, Deputy Ambrose came to him and told him that this was said. And yet, in spite of his reciting what Ambrose told him, he doesn't in that affidavit say that he heard it as well. As I said before, my client was found not guilty of assaulting Agent O'Malley, and yet the assault described there occurred prior to any physical contact. No other contact had been made, and he claims that my client stepped forward, put his hand on Agent O'Malley's chest, and pushed him, saying, "No one's coming in to search my apartment." The jury obviously rejected that testimony.
Let me talk to you about some of the elements that need to be proven for this crime. I wanted to ask you if you had any cases holding that a defendant must initiate the physical contact with the officers in order to be guilty of this offense, which is one of the positions you take in your brief.
Certainly. And admittedly, I can't find a case that specifically says that. I haven't seen cases that say yes or no on that. What I have based this on is U.S. versus Green. And in U.S. versus Green, there was an inmate in a federal correctional center who was accused of assaulting an employee. Like here, there was a time when he was being held by the person he was accused of having assaulted. He asked for an instruction defining willful, which the court did not give for reasons, I think, that are fact-specific to that case. But what the Green court did say was Green's argument is not wholly without merit. Assaults are specific intent crimes requiring proof that the defendant intended to frighten or inflict harm upon.
But then how
victim.
Do you reconcile that with the U.S. versus Ricketts case, a more recent case of ours in 1998, which said that Section 111 is a general intent crime?
Well, frankly,
how does that affect your position?
Well, I think U.S. versus Green has it right. I think as it relates to the facts here, we can see that U.S. versus Green has it right. The fact is, and the reason I talk about the facts and how close the facts were on this case, the fact that the deputy marshal's testimony in large part was rejected by the jury, and I think that all leads us to what they wanted when they asked the question on the second day of deliberation. They said, define intentionally, as that word is used in only one instruction, and that's the instruction that talks about the fact that it has to be forcibly done by my client. Now, when they say, tell us what intentionally means, again, it reinforces that they rejected the testimony of the deputy marshals. Certainly Agent Ambrose, who says that he was punched in the forehead as he moved towards my client, certainly a jury would not need to have a definition of intentionally given to them if they believed that testimony. If they believed it, then that certainly was an intentional act.
So is that how you try to distinguish Ricketts?
Well, I think Green had got it right, pure and simple, Your Honor.
So Ricketts is wrong?
I think it is wrong, Your Honor, yes. It's specific intent crime, as Green says. And yet, we don't need the court to find that in order to prevail on this. Because here's
do you have any support for your position that Ricketts is wrong from other circuits?
I do not, Your Honor.
Okay.
The supplemental instruction which Judge Kaur gave in defining intentional said that the physical contact, to be intentional, it must have been deliberately and not by accident or mistake. It must take place deliberately, not by accident or mistake. And really, the way that misled, given the facts here, is that it gave them the impression, I believe, that if it was not by mistake or accident, then it must be deliberate and intentional. And here the jury, clearly because of their verdict of not guilty on the one count, is struggling with the concept of whether or not the assault could take place during the altercation, during the struggle, if you will, which we would contend was Mr. Graham defending himself and the officers contend was them cuffing him. I don't believe under those circumstances that supplemental instruction fairly and adequately answered the question. I don't think when we look at all the circumstances of this case that it gave the information the jury needed. If they had been instructed, as we had requested, that he had to initiate the contact, then the issue would have been clarified. And I think that's the responsibility of the trial court. They have to answer the question specifically, and this is cited in my brief, it's the Sims case, adequately and fairly treat the issue and correctly state the law. And I think given the circumstances of this case, which were quite unusual, that the supplemental instruction did not do that.
All right. You're in your rebuttal time.
I understand. If there's no further questions, I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Is that Ms. or Mrs. Noller? Ms. Noller.
May it please the court, counsel. When a judge provides additional guidance in the district court on jury instruction, the law of this circuit and of every other circuit states that he is to provide proper guidance in light of the evidence presented in the case, the instructions taken as a whole, and also the case law. Where there is no support in any case that anybody can present to the district court showing that the definition of the word intentionally in this context should include that the defendant initiated conduct, it was proper for the district court, and it was within his discretion, to not instruct the jury on that matter. If there's no support in the law, the district court should not go that far afield. This court properly provided the guidance within the evidence shown before the jury or presented to the jury, and also the other instructions as well as the case law. As a threshold matter, the defendant here has not appealed the sufficiency of the evidence, so the fact that the officers may or may not have been impeached and whether or not that is sufficient to uphold the jury's guilty verdict is not before this court. What is before this court is whether or not the district court properly defined intentionally, and I'd like to call your attention to a case that we cited in our brief, which is United States versus Townsend, 987 F. 2nd, 927. It's an illegal wiretap case, but at the end of the decision, this court specifically says that to prevent problems in the future, intentionally should be defined as follows, and then it gives a definition of intentionally that can be applied to any statute. It does not just limit it to illegal wiretap. And that definition says, basically, that the government must prove that the defendant acted deliberately and purposefully. That is, his act must have been the product of his conscientious objective rather than the product of a mistake or accident. It contrasts a deliberate act from an accidental or a mistaken act, and that is the instruction that the district court judge provided here. It is proper. And nonetheless, the defendant insists that there be an initiated element read into the instruction that the district court gave. I already stated there is no law to support this, and it actually doesn't make any sense that that should be read in. One can foresee a situation where, say, as here a deputy marshal may put his hands on the defendant. If the defendant then responds by beating up the marshal or beating the tar out of him, he should not then have a free pass on a 111A claim. The district court here further accounted for that possibility, I suppose, by including in the elements instruction, instruction number 13A, a possibility of self-defense. So basically, the defendant got exactly what he wanted. He got an instruction that if the jury found that his incidental contact, as he describes it, with Deputy Ambrose, was an attempt to defend himself from the marshal's blows, or if essentially he was cowering from the marshals and happened to graze one of them, he got that instruction because the judge specifically said that he needs to intend to make that conduct. He got the best instruction that he possibly could under the law. Basically, what happened here is that there are two stories. The marshals told a story, all four marshals told a story that there was a struggle, and that in the course of the struggle, the defendant hit Deputy Ambrose. The defendant, on the other hand, acknowledges that there was a struggle. His wife acknowledges there was an altercation, and his neighbor acknowledges that he overheard a struggle. He just contends that in the course of that in the course of trying to defend himself, he may or may not have hit Deputy Ambrose. The jury had those two scenarios, and they were instructed, if they believed the defendant, in essence, to find the defendant not guilty. They did not do that. They found him guilty. The evidence supports the verdict, and it supports the verdict under the instructions that were given in this case. So no further questions?
Oh, I'm just curious. Couldn't this whole situation have been avoided or at least alleviated if the marshals had carried a copy of the arrest warrant with them?
The marshals testified at trial that it is not their practice or training to carry a copy of the arrest warrant. It's just that they secure the arrest warrant.
And why don't they?
The evidence presented at trial was that it is not necessary for them to do so.
I know, but do you know of any other jurisdiction that does?
I've not researched that issue, no, Your Honor. Actually, in this instance, I don't think it could have been.
I never heard of it before.
I hadn't either until I did this case, but I don't do a lot of assault cases. I don't know that it could have been avoided in this case, given the facts that were presented. Before the marshals even got to the question of an arrest warrant, the marshal's testimony, the evidence that was presented before the jury, was that the defendant's wife came out and sort of started the whole thing by running out of her bedroom, kicking and screaming, and her husband came to her defense, essentially. So this is even before they get to the question of the arrest warrant. The marshal's testimony was that it had already gotten to that point. The definition of intentionally was not an abuse of the district court's discretion, and for that reason, we ask that the judgment be affirmed.
Thank you. How much time? 2 minutes, Mr. Brooks.
The counsel points out correctly, we're not appealing the sufficiency of the evidence. The standard for that is quite high. But I think looking at it is very important in this case because it relates to this instruction. It relates to how very, I think, clearly the instruction had an impact on how this case was decided by the jury. And not only is U.S. versus Townsend so different factually as to not really aid us here, the instruction there is really not the same instruction that was given by the district court judge in this case. It went into it in a great deal more detail than the instruction here. I don't think in that instruction the jury would have been left with the impression that they were left with here, that if it's not accident or mistake, then it must be intentional. And that's what I think happened. I disagree with counsel. The defense never said that Mr. Graham may have hit the officer during the course of the struggle. There certainly was incidental contact, but certainly there was never any intent to strike or hit or assault or impede or anything else with regard to this officer. And the testimony with regard to the warrant, frankly, if you look at the record, it's a little bit flippant, because what the agent said was, well, we may have had it in the car, we just didn't have it with us. Well, if it's in the car, why isn't it in your hand to show to people to prevent these from taking place? I think overall, when you look at the record here, you have to acknowledge that the jury struggled with this case, and that the instruction, although Judge Kaur did his best to come up with his best thought on what was the appropriate instruction, this instruction was not appropriate. It misled the jury. It caused them, frankly, to make a mistake in this case. And we're asking that this court reverse the conviction.
Thank you, Mr. Crooks. Were you appointed or retained?
Your Honor, I was appointed under criminal justice.
All right. And we thank you for your service and for taking this appointment. And we thank both counsel for their fine argument. The case will be taken under advisement. Court will stand in recess until tomorrow morning at 9:30.
Thank you.